Welcome to Eco Living in Action, a half-hour sustainable living show with Maureen Howard. Maureen chats with a different guest each week about their sustainability activities and initiatives, from advice on tiny houses to rooftop gardens to wildlife-friendly farming practices. Maureen's guests are passionate individuals who are making a difference. Eco Living in Action, proudly supported by Taste Nature.
Kia ora, ko Maureen Howard ahau. Welcome to Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard, sustainability educator and host of this show. Now, lately in Dunedin, here close to the bottom end of New Zealand, it's been very wet. And in fact, this November was the wettest November on record for this part of the world. Now, one of the implications of this is that a lot of rubbish, as well as water, will have been heading down our stormwater drains and out into the ocean. Cigarette butts, plastics, all of those small things that end up in the gutter can make their way into the sea, where they can pollute and make it swallowed up in the stomachs of our marine life. So, what can we do about it? There are solutions, and one solution that is underway is being promoted by Rose Klukas, who, with the support of the Dunedin City Council and the Otago Regional Council, has been installing some litter traps, a type of in-drain filtering system. Now, Rose is a self-employed consultant ecologist with a background in environmental management advocacy and cultural awareness. And in August, Rose Klukas was nominated by Te Runaka o Kaitahu, and she was appointed to be one of New Zealand's government on the New Zealand government's conservation board. So Rose is a very valuable person for us to be having living here in Dunedin, and she's actually living in the valley, in Northeast Valley, which is close to where I live. So thank you so much, Rose, and thank you for coming on the show. So Rose, obviously you've got a big passion for water and waterways. What's your story?
Yeah. Oh, hi. Where to begin, really? I was brought up on the Pumanawawai, which is a group that we've put together in the Northeast Valley, a Kaitaho group looking at stormwater issues and trying to understand the stormwater system and find ways to intervene in the flow of sort of gross rubbish and chemicals and different things that go down the drains. So I've lived in Dunedin now 25 years. I came from Canterbury. I grew up near the Ashburton River, and we could hear the river, you know, flowing from home, and there was a creek down the back and bullies, and at the time there were mudfish. I didn't actually appreciate that at the time, but we had, you know, New Zealand's, Canterbury's threatened mudfish. And I guess we kind of grew up taking our waterways for granted. There's such a huge difference now in the way that the water in those creeks and rivers is now compared to what it was then. It was degraded then, though we didn't appreciate it, but the rate of degradation, you know, has increased. There are some things that have improved, but there's a lot that is worse than what it used to be. In Canterbury, things are largely worse, but I guess, you know, around Dunedin, since the 1960s, the 1990s, there's actually been improvements in the stormwater system. And, of course, the council is still looking to improve the stormwater system. So there's a lot that we've been learning in the last 6 months to a year that we initiated this project, and trying to understand what the stormwater system's about, because it's largely hidden to most of us.
Because I see people all the time throwing their cigarette butts into the drain.
I saw a guy over the road the other day throw out his entire ashtray out of his car and dump it on the side of the road, and the ash and all the butts heading down off into the stormwater system. I think a lot of people have this misconception that actually the stormwater is filtered and that their rubbish is going to be filtered out and the council takes care of it, but of course it doesn't. It all goes out into the harbour, mm-hmm. or into the streams and eventually into the harbour.
So in most places what we see, you know, you see the grating on the surface of the drain. That is it for most drains, isn't it? That is the filtering system.
So there is a very sort of relatively passive system for filtering stuff out. The first line of defence is the grate. Amazing what can get through the grate, actually, or what people push through grates. But the grade is the first line of defence. The second line of defence is the mud tank, which is quite, on average, they're fairly deep, around about a metre deep, and all of the sediment that flow, well, not all of the sediment, but, you know, it's... I'm not sure if any measures have been done about the degree of sediment what actually filters into the system does settle out into the mud tanks, but certainly the mud tanks are about a metre deep and they do fill up with sediment, and that sediment is a range of things that drain into the stormwater system, and that's emptied out on a sort of a rotation. They test the mud tanks and for the amount of sediment buildup that there is, and they suck it out around the city. So that's the sort of second line, but also the tanks are constructed in such a way that the plasticky floaty stuff like the butts and things float to the surface.
And they carry on, don't they?
Well, in theory, the mud tanks are constructed in such a way that that stuff sits on the surface and then should be sucked out when the tanks are clean. But, of course, when it rains, there's a good deal of turbulence depending on the degree of rainfall in there, so that stuff is suspended throughout the water column and then will suck through the stormwater system and go along with everything else.
Right. Well, it's good to hear that there's a certain amount there is being collected, but it's not actually filtered as such. It's just relying on that shape of the mud tank, isn't it?
That's right, to keep it.
And I guess with this, we've had a lot of rain in November, so perhaps we can expect to have had more of that stuff going out into the ocean.
I think it's highly likely. I mean, the thing is, it's really hard to tell, and I haven't seen any published studies on it. I've had a look, possibly there is something out there, but I haven't found anything. But I think, I mean, what we wanted to do was look at the litter accumulation on both sides of the street so that we can get an appreciation of how much the litter traps are catching. They're not going to be equivalent, but over time, you know, they'll be relatively equivalent. We'd expect that the amount of rubbish coming down one side of the street will be similar to the other side over time, and that if we look at both sides of the street and measure the amount of stuff that's coming out, we'll see whether or not there's a difference, and then we can get a kind of a measure on the degree to which the litter traps are intercepting the amount of rubbish and therefore the amount of rubbish going down.
So there isn't actually data, because I guess, yeah, there can't be, because it's all being heading out, you know, on what is actually getting out into the ocean. Does the council measure at the other end? Do they do a bit of measuring at that end sometimes?
So they do look at the amount of... they do annual reports. You can go online and... I'm not sure if you can go online, but you could certainly request the DCC what the outcomes for annual monitoring is. But there is monthly and six-monthly monitoring at different culverts, and the sediment around the culverts and the harbours are looking at the kind of contamination, the metal, heavy metals, organic compounds, different things that are sitting in the sediment. That stuff is being measured on an annual basis and being reported. So, but the gross kind of litter contaminants, like the cigarette butts and the bottle tops and all of that polystyrene, quite a bit of polystyrene we noticed in the system. All of that kind of stuff, of course, goes out, and there is has previously been no way of measuring it that I'm aware of. So I think it'll be interesting to see what comes out, and I think people will be generally interested, and I hope that it will alter people's behaviour, most of all.
Okay, so what I guess is on everybody's thoughts, if you're listening, what does this litter trap look like and how does it work?
So the litter traps have been in development over a number of years. The ones that we're utilising are manufactured in New Zealand, I think. Well, they've certainly been designed in New Zealand. Stormwater 360, they are in Auckland. So they are manufacturing these now. They are plastic traps out of recycled plastic. And they allow, obviously, you know, it's always risk, and the council were a little bit risk averse when we floated this idea with them in the first place, because obviously nobody wants flooding. And so they need to be of such a porosity that they allow water to flow unimpeded through whilst collecting all that rubbish. So currently these things are quite sophisticated looking pieces of equipment. They fold up, so they're easy to send and to work with and to lift and light. But they're made out of plastic mesh.
And they sit down. So you take off the grate and you kind of slot them in and they sit down into the drain. Isn't that right? And put the grate back on.
Basically. In simple terms.
In very simple terms.
Yeah, in simple terms, that's how it works. We had Stormwater 360 were very kind to us. They kindly sent down a technician at their cost to fit them for us. We've fitted four of them around the valley in different size traps. I'm not quite sure that we got all of the traps. So we've got a single trap size actually sitting throughout the valley. I think it's all a big learning curve for us, doing this sort of thing, working with the council figuring out, how they can accommodate this. And so the traps actually have been retrofitted to fit the different mud tanks. So there's plastic fittings around the outside of them to ensure that they're all sitting flush and that nothing, moves through the mud tank that doesn't first of all go through the litter trap.
So what was the time frame for that? Like, when did you first put those in?
Well, they've only been in less than a month.
But in that rainy month too.
I know. I've been in Australia actually, so I can't say I've been to check them, but within the first couple of days, there was an accumulation of cigarette butts and things already. So, I mean, even after a couple of days, because of course we're quite excited in the beginning to see, what good we'd done.
You might already find somebody's wedding ring. People drop things and they think about this stuff.
I did ask what the council had found previously, and they said that even at some point somebody had put a laptop through one of the grates, so all sorts of things go down the grates.
Wow, that's amazing. Okay, I presume it wasn't working by the end of it. So it's this organisation, Stormwater 360, and they've developed the litter trap, and it's come from a prototype before that, wasn't it, with the EnviroPod?
That's right, yeah, the EnviroPod. I think they were a metal meshed trap, had larger and heavier. I'm not sure about what the rationale for the improvements have been. I guess transportation and things are a concern when you're dealing in selling, shipping, and fitting these sorts of things. But when I was in Hobart last week, and actually I noticed that there were litter traps all through Hobart in the lower city, and they were all, I'm not sure how widespread, but I suspect due to cost they're probably in the close around the more dense areas and the shopping areas. That's certainly where I saw them, and they had I'm not sure whether they were EnviroPods or not, but they were metal meshed traps, and they were catching a lot of rubbish. It was really interesting. Now when I go overseas, I look at
I'm going to be looking
systems
into drains, and I'm sure everyone who's listening to this will be too. And so where else in New Zealand have we got any of these litter traps?
Well, I'm not sure how widespread they are, but certainly Auckland City Council is using them. There's around about 150 spread throughout Auckland. Yeah. So they seem to be operating and utilising them without any problems. And they have fairly high rainfall and sudden cloudbursts in Auckland. So I would have thought if they were an issue, then they wouldn't be utilising them there. So, yeah, I hope that in the long run here, we're going to find that they are, a good short-term solution for reducing the amount of rubbish that we have going out into the harbour.
Yes, and I think it's become such a huge issue, the amount of plastic that's getting into the oceans, and it's been really highlighted a lot.
I know
in the
media. Been coming up on my Facebook page. I don't know about everybody else's, but I've been reading George Monbiot's been, talking about the amount of plastic. I mean, there's a lot of places now around the world, of course, cutting down on or eliminating the use of plastic bags and disposable single-use items. Richard Edinburgh's been talking about it as well and strongly advocating. So I'm assuming it's not just my Facebook feed.
It's mine, but we may be both similar kinds of people.
Yeah, we might be in the same bubble.
We might be. But however, it has also been on the general news as well. So tell me, Rose, about your group, because you're not doing this on your own, are you?
That's right. So Pumanawa Wai at the moment is sort of a collection of largely four or five of us. I've been working with Ranui Ryan, Vicky Lenehan, Queenie Scott. Queenie has been involved for a long time with the Valley Project. So this is allied to the Valley Project, Northeast Valley Project. We haven't had a lot to do with Love the Lindsay yet, but Queenie certainly has. I mean, we've all been involved to some extent in the field days. And so I think, you know, to a large extent, the momentum of the Valley Project and the open sanctuary idea and other things have kind of seeded this in us that we wanted to be engaged and involved and do kind of something which was, kaitahu focused, that, you know, we thought that perhaps we could bring to this that might be different. We, you know, perhaps have funding streams available that we can build on, and wanting to bring in, kaitahu artists and things to work with us in the longer term. This is really, you know, just getting off the ground for us, having first made our application to the DCC Te Aotearoa Fund, getting these things in. When you're working on a voluntary capacity, nothing happens overnight. It sort of trickles along slowly. But from the beginning of the year, when we first made our application to its acceptance and funding at the beginning of the financial year, you know, we've now got litter traps in, and it's a good start.
Mm. And really, it is important that it's kind of done in a small way at first, isn't it? Because data will have to be collected to see if this is something that can be spread out across the city, hopefully.
Yeah, well, there's a lot of technical stuff that you have to start learning that you didn't, you know, previously understand when you come to dealing with, the DCC and, and the stormwater and the mud tanks and their sizes and all of the kind of implications that are involved in getting this kind of thing up and running. There was, first of all, I thought I had it all sorted, and then we discovered we had to get, roading, traffic management.
For the actual thing of then putting them actually in.
That's right, for getting them sorted, for getting them in, traffic management, those kind of things. When you begin dealing and working with infrastructure, there are all sorts of things that... and that was the thing, really. It's about scoping what's feasible and what's not feasible. I mean, in the beginning, I think we were a bit starry-eyed when we went into it, thinking, oh, yeah, we could do this. But actually, there's quite a bit to think through before you can begin mucking around with the city's infrastructure.
Yeah, but actually, I think being starry-eyed is a really good idea, because it allows us to progress and to commit. And then you work it all out as you go along.
Yeah, it all starts with a good idea.
Yeah. Oh, it's a great idea. It's such a great idea.
Yeah,
I love
thanks.
It. Yeah. So, and I'm sure for people who are listening, this, you know, can be really getting people thinking about, you know, what we're actually putting down the drain, because obviously in the first place it'd be better if it didn't go down there in the first place.
And I've been learning along the way things that I've been doing that I didn't really understand, you know, the effect that it was having. I mean, just water blasting your backyard, you know, where is it draining to? You know, mine was draining down a hole in the concrete that had been fitted to the stormwater system. You know, I had no idea that when I bought the house, you know, you don't think about those things. Same for when you're water blasting your roof and the paint goes down, you know, it should really be diverted off and strained out and put into the rubbish, because otherwise you end up with lead paint going down into the stormwater system. There's many things. I mean, spraying, we all use spray and walk away or some form of it, because it's such a damp, wet climate, and slippery paths or bricks and things are lethal, and it is one of the easier ways to manage areas where you walk, and yet, you know, those sorts of things also all end up down the drain. And
yeah, so it would be really good, yeah, to just think about before you do buy those easy products that often, yeah, there's a result there downstream, literally.
Yeah.
Another one that I read of, which really stuck with me, was children. It was somewhere up north, but I remember reading that someone... that, you know, the eels that the children used to feed were suddenly all dead. And what had happened was that the day before, someone had had put a new concrete path in, and it had rained, and that cement liquid had gone off down into the drain, and it's very, very alkaline, and it had killed the eels. So it's these things that we don't think of, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. And the council was putting advice out there, but industry still, I think, you know, needs to step up in a big way. We're, you know, building, and people are laying concrete all the time, and we saw some just sort of recently around the gardens too, now that our, you know, that our radars are operating on this sort of thing, where it was being flushed down the drains, and we had words to the contractors about it, put it very nicely. But yeah, there's still a lot of growth of awareness that's required for us to really understand any of this. We're so used to treating our waterways like drains.
Yeah.
Well, they are drains, but they are waterways.
But we need to perhaps rethink that word drain, rather than we tend to have a certain thought about it. But it's a channel way. It's in a way it's a tributary to our streams, isn't it?
Well, they're all converted tributaries. Mm. It's all catchment. We're looking at catchments. We're living in catchments. And catchments are formed, you know, where natural watercourses run, and we've diverted and channelized those watercourses and turned them to our own advantage, but to the disadvantage of the creatures that lived in them to begin with, you know. Yeah, I think we've got a lot of rethinking to do. But I think there's a lot of thought leaders in this happening around the world. I just looked online in the Hobart, and the amount of stormwater capture that there are, rain gardens, those kind of things that are being developed. And we've got a lot of inner city development happening in the next 10 years with the plan, you know, the recent iterations of, yeah.
TGP.
And the rebuild of the... the hospital rebuild and the revamp of the city centre. I think there's opportunities for us to be, you know, thinking about that sort of thing in these designs and reducing the amount of non-permeable surface that we are, you know, forever spreading everywhere. I mean, that's happening. That's happening to some extent, but it needs to happen more. We all need to be cognizant of it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we've just got a few minutes left, but... I really wanted just to say, so like your big vision for Dunedin is in 30 seconds, please.
My big vision. Well, like, what I'd really like to see, of course, is native fish, you know, good, healthy populations of native fish in our streams. I'm not really seeing that at the moment, you know. There's too much degradation and pollution in those streams for there to be good populations of native fish. We've got a lot of remediation and restoration to do, but it's certainly doable. And, that's what I'd like to see.
Mm, absolutely. Mm. Right. So we're coming to the end of the show now, and thank you so much. I don't know if people want to get in touch with you, or perhaps to look at that litter trap. They can look at it online, can't they?
They can. You can go to Stormwater 360 and see the litter traps. But there are 4 litter traps around the valley. They're all in reasonably accessible places. I'm not going to tell you exactly where they are. You might like to go around and explore the stormwater system for yourself and see if you can spot them.
Yeah, right. And if you do want to look at that website, it's Litta, LITTATRAP.
That's right, yeah.
Just in case people are hearing that wrong. So thank you so much, Rose.
Yeah, well, when we, you know, get some findings, one of us will come on again. And anybody, you know, who's interested in joining us, it'd be great to have more involvement.
So how should they get in touch with you?
Look at it. Well, we are on Facebook, so maybe look up. We're under Pumanawawai, so look us up there.
So it's Pumanawawai.
Yes.
That's 2 separate words. Okay.
Pumanawawai.
Pumanawawai. Yeah. Well, all the very best, and thanks to you and the team.
Thanks.
And thank you for listening. This is Eco Living in Action. I'm Maureen Howard. We're supported by Taste Nature. If you'd like to listen to the show again, you can download us on a podcast at oar.org.nz. Thanks for listening, and happy Christmas, and we'll catch you in the new year.
Taste Nature is Dunedin's organic food shop and eatery at 131 High Street. Open 7 days, Taste Nature carries a wide range of certified organic primary produce and whole foods. The eatery features seasonal organic fare made with the freshest ingredients. Want fresh organic produce and grocery items delivered direct to your door? Contact Taste Nature to try one of their popular organic produce boxes or personalised grocery orders. Good food, direct to you. Taste Nature, online at tastenature.co.nz.